paradise is a garden, but heaven is a city. So says author and my mentor this year, Sarah Miles, in her new book, City of God, where she spends an entire book outlining and telling the stories of where she is seeing God at work in the Mission District, where she has lived the last number of years, seeing God alive and well in the bustle, and bringing images of what it might look like to have heaven in the city. I grew up in a place that was maybe a little bit more akin to the geography of the Genesis account. I grew up in a small island in northwest Washington on a homestead, 10 acres, that my parents bought when I was a little toddler, and grew up with a garden to play in. I, as a very young child, had my own very little garden patch, and I planted the two things. I think my mother might have had something to do with this, but I thought I chose radishes and forget-me-nots. Turns out that those are the two things that you can successfully grow as a four-year-old, and that you can put enough radishes in that you can pull them up at each stage along the way and see how they were growing. But as I became an adult, I've had a growing fascination with cities and with nature in cities and with how nature, people, and the urban landscape interact. I fell in love with nature and cities in New York and Central Park. And I had a profound experience one day when I was sitting in Central Park and looking out across the landscape. And I realized there was some reversal going on. Often we look across nature and we see cities. Here I was looking across, sorry, wrong way around. We see the landscape is that we see that the large sweep and then we see the city. And here I was seeing nature was up close and here and in the distance around me was surrounded by the city. I remember a day where I was in London and I found a little farmer's market and found a mango and sat on the lawn of Westminster Abbey. And there's something about eating that mango on the grass in the middle of the city with people all around. There's something about humanity being crammed together and about having to pay attention and notice where is God at work? Where are those flashes of the heavenly city around us. Now, as we heard when we worked with the children this morning, I'm captivated by the bookends of this book that we have been coming back to for generations across the Christian tradition, the beginnings and the endings. There's something about the fact that this sacred text that has come through time begins in this garden and ends in the city that I just can't let go of. I keep wrestling with what is it about this narrative? What is it about this beginning in Genesis that describes a pristine view of creation, lush and abundance, this place of innocence? And then if we take the biblical narrative as one big arc, this conversation between God and humanity, these stories across time, that we come to the end of the book of Revelation, we find a garden. But this time it's not marked by pristine nature or exclusive dress code, or a lack thereof dress code. But the garden is in a city, and it's in the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem. It's a city that has a water of life running through it. A city with a tree that has leaves that heal the nations. It's a city with 12 gates around it, welcoming people in from all places and backgrounds, paths and creeds, to come together in the hustle and the bustle of this life. And it's a city that operates with a heavenly way of being. The life of useful service to each other, loving God and our neighbors, a heavenly way of life nestling itself here on earth. Now, before we get any further, I think I need to give you a bit of context of where I stand as your preacher today. I thrive in ecumenical and interfaith environments, and I love seeing where God is at work in the world and in many spiritual paths. And I stand here as a Christian and as a Swedenborgian. And for me, it's my engagement with Swedenborgian theology and some good, solid biblical studies courses in seminary that enable me to stand here confidently as a Christian and choose two of the most controversial texts in the Bible, beginning of Genesis and the end of Revelation, to preach on this morning. Because here in Genesis, we find this creation story that has so often been taken literally and leads to heated debates on religion and science. I don't know if any of you caught the Bill Nye and the Science Guy and Canon Ham and the creations debate last month. So often this text is used to pit a belief in the natural world against a devotion to God and religious life. And the tension over this initial story in the Judeo-Christian scriptures has led many a person to leave religion altogether, seeing the Christian tradition as one that is antiquated, fundamentalist, and out of touch with the realities and the beauty of this natural world. Now, the book of Revelation, on the other hand, seems to pop up in our current culture in also generally, in my opinion, unfortunate ways. From the railings of fire and brimstone preachers condemning people to hell, to the nightmare-giving novels of those that will be left behind as the rapture comes, and to the real-life, terrifying, in my experience, rhetoric that supports all sorts of war, chaos, and destruction of the natural world in the name of bringing the end times here sooner. So you might wonder, why would I choose these two passages as my text? It's not just that I'm trying to stir the pot and make interesting conversations after church, though I love to engage in those. And it's not that I choose these passages to point out those crazy fundamentalists that are also our brothers and sisters in the Christian landscape. But I choose to bring them forward because it's something I believe that can speak to us today. And that there's a vision there for what the church is created for and what the world can be. Because, yes, there are groups of people and theological constructs that can take these passages and other places in the Bible and make them be about the literalistic view of creation of the natural world, or read the book of Revelation as a warning label for destruction. But I believe there is another way. And that there are many scholars and theologians, people of faith and those who are not, who translate and read these stories in other ways. And I bring us them together to look at them because I think there's a profound message in what comes at the beginning and the end of a story. A couple of hundred years ago, Emanuel Swedenborg, the Christian mystic that this tradition reads, wrote some theological constructs that invites us to bring these stories to life. Swedenborg taught the Bible as not being read primarily as a literal text, but as a spiritual one, a multi-layered and multi-faceted document that in every nuance, in the arch of the book of the whole, down to the very letter, that there's some story being told, stories of humanity and divinity and of our own spiritual growth. And one of the narratives that Swedenborg expounds on quite, goes on and on and on and on about, is this one at the end of the book of Revelation. And as was mentioned this morning, the very title of our tradition throughout time has been Church of the New Jerusalem. This idea that this heavenly city, there's something about this heavenly city coming down on earth that we can pay attention to. Swedenborg taught about heaven and heavenly ways of life and gave us images such as this one, that heaven consists in a heartfelt desire to do good for others rather than for one's own good, in serving others from the love of making them happy and not for the sake of selfish reward. You can go on and on about what the qualities of heaven are. And these stories can remind us of how is it that we can be part of being more heavenly people, more heavenly communities, creating space, more places of heaven here on earth. And so maybe that's why you're here this morning. I don't know why you're here this morning, but maybe you chose out of all the different ways that you could spend your Sunday morning, and we all know that there are many delightful ways to spend our time, that you came to this sacred spot to find this peace and beauty, to find community, and to surround yourself with others who are looking for God in and amongst people, nature, and life. And that something about that this community embodies, the willingness and the desire to look and to see how God is present in the natural world, present in the communal world, and present here on earth and in our city. In the theology of the Swedenborgian Church, we find language for ways of being that are receptive to a heavenly way of life, and ways to encounter the less than heavenly parts of our lives in the world. And this story in the book of Revelation gives us, Swedenborg's passages about it, give us some ideas of what some clues are of what that heavenly city might look like. It's a place where all are welcome, where many paths are honored, and where all are seen as precious humanity. It's a sacred space that engages the natural world, engages the beauty of God's creation, and can see God in all things. And it's a community that's centered around a theology of useful action and engaging and serving in an interconnected world. So I'm on the lookout. I have my eyes open for where are the places where we see these glimpses of heaven? Where are the ways that places of brokenness, of struggle, of despair are having a heavenly light shown onto them, and where some of these leaves that heal the nations, the water of life, are flowing? Where are the places that the new heaven and the new earth are coming, where a new way of seeing heaven and religion is coming alive? Where are the places where the river of life, bright as a crystal, flowing out of the throne and from the Lamb, are alive in our world? This year, I've been working over at St. Gregory's of Nyssa Episcopal Church, doing my third year internship for seminary. And I spend time there on Sunday mornings, which is why I regret that this is the first time to make it across town to my dear Swedenborgian community. But I also, my main site there comes on Fridays. And we have a different kind of congregation at St. Gregory's on Fridays. On Fridays, we take the rotunda where there's a communion table in the middle, where on Sundays, Eucharist, communion, Holy Supper is served every week. And around this communion table, in this large round room, we bring in literally tons of fresh fruit and vegetables and food. The big truck drives up from the San Francisco Food Bank, and massive pallets are unloaded, and we spend all morning setting up this veritable feast of a pop-up grocery store in the middle of the sanctuary. And at noon, we open the doors, and 400-plus families a week come through and get groceries, people who would not have access to groceries and otherwise, and people who get to have fresh fruit and vegetables that is not available to them. Here in that space, I've seen some of the heavenly city. And I see it in glimpses and places. And a lot of days, and for hours, it's just hard work. You know, like, it's not all pretty and exciting in every moment. It's a lot of, like, unloading watermelons. And there's grumpy volunteers. And, you know, there's the deer Russian grandmother who grew up hungry on a regular basis, who's always trying to sneak an extra loaf of bread, and you have to deal with whether you stop her or you just say, we get it, we love it, we love you, and we get that you came out of a place where if you can grab an extra loaf of bread, you grab it. But there at the pantry, I've seen something about the heavenly city, because people are coming together in community to feed each other and to be fed. And it's not just the people who are coming through to get groceries that are fed. The magic that I've seen at the food pantry is the community that is built in the volunteers. Our volunteers come from so many different backgrounds. Many of them first came through the doors and still come through the doors because they're hungry and they need groceries. But they come together, and there's something about being able to give and to feed and to have the honor of interacting with people you would never sit down and spend time with otherwise. It's one place that I see this holy city. And so we can think about, where do you see the heavenly city? Is it the heavenly city that drives you to take a deep breath before you speak? To spend time in the ocean or in the redwoods or in your backyard and be contemplative and soak up the divinity that is in the natural world? Is it this movement of the heavenly city that can encourage us to look with new eyes and to see a human in another person, to see how each are precious creations of God? Today we prayed the Lord's Prayer, and maybe that's something that's in your regular spiritual routine. And we said the words, "As in heaven, so upon the earth." I believe that we are called to be part of making this world a little less broken and hellish and a little more heavenly and loving. Because we all know the world around us does struggle, and there are places of brokenness. We know places in our own lives, in our communities, in our global family where there is darkness and pain, places that are crying out for a heavenly light and a heavenly way of life. And we live in a time where we can point to this disconnection, the disintegration of our culture as it moves in ways that are consumeristic and isolated, and we can become disconnected from the earth, from each other, and from God. We can come to this beautiful, tranquil space in the middle of the city and find the peace of heaven. And that even as we breathe it in, we can use it as the reminder of other places in our lives and in the world that are reaching out and yearning for that type of peace and beauty and compassion. We can come and pray, "As in heaven, so upon the earth," and be reminded that we are part of that process as we approach the world and our relationships, our words and our actions. And this vision of the heavenly city, it can inform our dreamings, our passions, our callings, the work that we do, the way that we interact in our lives, how we can live a life of seeing the humanity in all people, recognizing God in all things, and engaging in a life of useful service in all the things we do. We are each part of bringing the heavenly city to earth. So what are your images of heaven here on earth? What are the things that you are working for and towards and living in that are part of this dream? I'll let you in on one of mine. It's an audacious vision that God's been growing in me and that I've moved to begin sharing and inviting others into. I see a glimpse of heaven when people are eating together and feeding each other, be it gathered around a table or on a picnic blanket. I see a glimpse of heaven when we are present in nature and look to the divine while working the earth together. I have a vision of what a glimpse of heaven on earth could look like as I begin to create a ministry that is based on this idea of an urban garden, a garden church, a church that is a garden. To take an abandoned lot in a neighborhood that's yearning for a place to come together as community for transformation and to be fed in mind and in body and in spirit. I hold an image of a garden that would be the sanctuary of the church. Raised beds that double as benches surrounding a communion table, some folding chairs set up for worship outside, or moved into a multi-purpose greenhouse if it's a rainy day. A garden church where the church is in the garden and where the garden is the work of the community. And that as a community forms, the needs of a local community, and the gifts and talents of all involved that would come together and the connections and work would grow. I dream of a garden where social and economic norms are turned upside down when you find an 80-year-old immigrant grandmother teaching a young hipster upstart how to plant kale. I imagine a garden where sustainable, healthy food is grown and people reconnect to the earth and to the health of our own bodies and our own community as we learn to eat vegetables they have nurtured and harvested. I imagine a garden where we gather regularly for worship in curiosity and expectation for the gospel to come alive in our shared liturgy, in the sacrament and embodiment of love. And I imagine a community that is alive with the vision to reimagine church. What is this heavenly city? Deeply rooted in our Christian and Swedenborgian tradition, alive and creative and innovative in the ways that it shows up in our community today. And so this is the vision of heaven on earth that is driving me right now as I'm finishing up seminary and cultivating what comes next. This is the work that has captured my imagination, that I constantly think about and lie awake at night and think about what every moment and wonder about and talk about. And so I wonder, what is that thing for you? What is that idea or concept, the theme, the project, the relationship that captures your imagination? Is it a relationship that you're investing in? Be a parent to a child or a child to a parent, a spouse, your working environment. Maybe it's a spiritual practice that you've taken on because you see how you are changed in it and how when you are changed, that changes the way that you interact with the world. What are the audacious ways that you vision heaven coming down on earth? Each of you took the time to come together this morning and be in spiritual community. And whether you've just wandered in the door or you've been coming here since you were a child, I believe we're each here today for a reason, and that we have the opportunity to be reminded of the divine presence that infuses all, and the call to be part of bringing a heavenly way of life to the earth around us. Because we are each called to be part of this new way of being in the world, this heavenly city that engages the works of compassion and justice, seeking peace and healing and loving kindness. The call of the movement from the paradise, pristine garden of Adam and Eve to the heavenly city, New Jerusalem, isn't always comfortable. It will stretch us and change us and bring us to encounter parts of ourselves and others that we would never see if we stayed in our isolated Edens. Living the life of heaven doesn't promise to be easy, but I believe it promises to be good. And as we continue to turn to God, receive the divine presence around us, we are led, we are held, we are loved, and we are in heaven. Amen. Mm-hmm.